Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of January. Before we begin our political conversation, the first hour of our show today, we do want to tell you that at noon today, there will be live coverage of the inauguration of Governor Jim Doyle and other state constitutional officers at the state capitol. Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton, Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, Secretary of State Doug LaFollette, and State Treasurer Dawn Marie Sass will also be sworn in. The event will preempt the last half hour of the Larry Mueller program and the first airing of Chapter a Day. Chapter a Day available for online listening at WPR.org and, of course, is regularly scheduled in a rebroadcast at 11 p.m. on the Ideas Network. So, noon today, live coverage of the inauguration of Governor Jim Doyle. We're going to be talking politics with two guests the first hour of our program today, and there's a lot to discuss here. Of course, Congress is returning tomorrow. We'll spend a full hour talking about what's on their agenda. We have a new Speaker of the House, a historic moment with Nancy Pelosi being sworn in tomorrow. We have all these people who are deciding that they think they're going to run for president, or they think they are, and they form a committee, and then they decide they're not. Our guest, one of our guests this hour, says if your first name is not Hillary or Barack, it will be very difficult to get noticed. We'll be looking at the star power of both of those potential candidates, and we can look at, oh, just a number of other issues as well. What about the war? What about the president's, what do we anticipate the president will be saying in his address next week? If he calls for a surge in troops, what's the American public going to say about all of this? We'll have Ken Rudin with us a little bit later this hour, political editor for National Public Radio, who's been directing campaign coverage for the network for a number of years. Dr. Martin Gruberg is with us now, presently professor of political science, assistant chair and past chair of the department at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, where he also directs the pre-law program. He's written a number of books, including one which will be pertinent to our conversation, Women in American Politics, which he wrote quite a few years ago, and so much has happened with women in politics. We may start with Nancy Pelosi with him. And we'll welcome your phone calls. Our number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 227-2050, 227-2050. Dr. Martin Gruberg, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to.
Yeah. Let's start with Nancy Pelosi, if you don't mind, because I was interested. You wrote a book back in 1968, Women in American Politics. Tomorrow is a rather historic day for women in American politics.
Well, yes, it is. First time that Congress has a woman as the speaker. Well, she got off on the wrong foot right after the election when she supported John Merther to be her deputy.
Mm-hmm.
And this Steny Hoyer comes from the state that she had started from, Maryland, and there's no love lost between the two of them. Now, how well the two will work together remains to be seen.
Yeah. What about the moments, the first moments for the Democratic Congress tomorrow? Do you imagine that they're going to try to accomplish a whole lot in a very short period of time?
I can't see it because any legislation still has to go to President Bush, and even though he may be a lame duck, he still can exercise his veto.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't exercised vetoes much at all in the 6 years up to now, but of course he had Republican majority of both houses.
It is hard to imagine how the executive and Congress are going to interact, and it's a long 2 years.
It is. Some hotheads have talked about impeachment. I don't foresee that as an option, but there certainly will be investigations, and it won't be pat the hairs in the right direction, especially as we get close to the 2008 election.
Right.
They're going to be going for the jugular.
Mm-hmm. And those investigations will cover what?
Certainly how we got into Iraq and where we are now and where we're going to be going, but also domestically, things like the foul-up by FEMA, Hurricane Katrina, there are a lot of other domestic issues that are coming up. You know, the Democrats might try to advance the date for the minimum wage increase. They're also likely to drag their heels when it comes to fast track for trade authorizations, you know, things that might expand beyond NAFTA. So there are a number of things. And, of course, the candidates for the presidency are going to be posturing. They're going to be in a position to get publicity, to try to advance their prospects.
It is amazing that we are having people announcing so early. We've talked about this before, but what an arduous couple years it's going to be for these people. This is a long time to run for president,
it's
isn't it?
It's an arduous time for the American people. You know, the groupies might follow, but most of us, we wake up that there's a presidential election in September or October of the quadrennial year. But certainly from the point of view of the candidates, if you don't start raising a fantastic amount of money, if you don't have people endorsing you, people working in your campaign, you might discover that your exploratory efforts are going to come to nil. So I sometimes feel that the starting of the 2008 election campaign was the night of the 2004 results. So, you know, these people are thinking about where they go from here. And why else would so many of the politicians spend time in New Hampshire and Iowa?
Right.
It's not because of the climate. It's not because of the vacation possibilities. It's just to get started with the first in the nation events.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think our guest, the second half hour, Ken Rudin, has said? If your first name is not Hillary or Barack, it's going to be very difficult to get noticed.
On the Democratic side, I agree. And of course, you can say now, Hillary, she has been in the spotlight since 1992. Barack Obama, it's only within the last 2 years or so that he's been of mention. You can say, well, wait a second, how can a fellow with so little experience at the national level be a serious candidate for president? But John Edwards, you know, he was somebody who came out of nowhere in 2004,
right.
And Howard Dean came out of nowhere in 2004. You know, we're going to have some retread candidates. We're going to have people who tried before. You know, John Kerry might try again. Joe Biden, you know, he started 1988 running for president, the time when Al Gore was running for president
right.
The first time. So, you know, there are all these possibilities, you're right, or Ken Rudin is right, that at the moment it looks like the choice is between Hillary and, you know, she's got a lot of things going for her, but a lot of opposition. It's not like the Kennedys, you know. There are people who love the Kennedys and the people who hated the Kennedys. And, you know, you might think it's a reflection on Bill Clinton, but it might also be a sense that you know, she's been a senator since 2001, and so definitely she's got that expertise. You know, she in the 1970s was rated as one of the top 100 young attorneys. So it's not just that she's got the name; she's also got the talent.
Right.
But she comes on some people as harsh. Mm-hmm. Other people see her as cautious. So we'll see what happens.
Right. We will see what happens.
Yeah.
Senator John Edwards' announcement didn't make – I understand that he's getting big crowds in Nevada and various places, but his announcement didn't make very much of a splash, do you think?
I agree. But then again, he's – somebody who, you know, again, trial lawyer. People either hate trial lawyers or they say, yeah, he can speak well. He's got charisma. But at the moment, his prospects depend on Hillary slipping. You know, if she stumbles, then it might be an open field.
And let's talk just a little bit more about Barack Obama. Should he decide to enter, what happens in the dynamic between Hillary and Barack?
No one likes to say they're running for vice president, but there are a number of these people who have announced or would announce for president who really would accept the vice presidency, thinking that, okay, it's premature in 2008, but maybe 2012 if their ticket goes down a defeat in 2008. Or maybe something will happen, and whoever is elected might screw up, and there might be a one-term president. So, but he's young enough. You know, he's not all that young. You know, that's the other thing.
Right, he's really not.
He's 45.
Right.
But remember, back in 1960, they made a big to-do about John Kennedy's age. And he was 43, and Dan Quayle in 1988.
Yes, right.
Said, "I'm another John Kennedy," and that he was clobbered by his vice presidential adversary, Lloyd Benson. "I knew John Kennedy, and you're not John Kennedy."
Right, right. Yeah.
In 1988, I had Al Gore speak to my American government class, and you get impressed until I tell you it's his dad, Al Gore Sr. But the week that he came to speak to my students, he told them that his son had passed a milestone. His son had turned 40. In other words, he's old enough to be president. The Constitution says 35, but 40 is certainly quite young. The youngest person who has been president was Teddy Roosevelt. He was 42 when McKinley was killed. Kennedy was 43, and Nixon was only about 2-3 years older. So, they make a to-do about Nixon's
age.
Was
he really? I keep thinking of Nixon as always being old for some reason.
Yes, prematurely old. But,
right.
Lyndon Johnson and Stuart Symington, who were trying against Kennedy in 1960, they talked about you need a candidate with gray in his temple. And they were just about 5-6 years older, so they weren't that dramatically old. Of course, that might be an issue with John McCain. You know, he's going to be 70s and if he is president. But Ronald Reagan, he was the oldest man ever to have served as president. So, if you're in good health, you might do quite well. Of course, we know definitely that Dick Cheney is not going to run. You know, in recent years, vice presidents have been thought of as the successor to their leader, but he's had heart problems, and so aside from any backlash caused by his policies, but he's out of the picture. Age, I don't know if it's going to be a factor or not.
Well, we're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking politics the first hour of our program today, looking at those who have announced for the presidency. We're also looking at the new session of Congress. We'll spend much more time on that tomorrow. I do want to ask our guest, too, about the death of President Gerald Ford, who's been described again and again as perhaps the last decent, honest, just sort of common, good man who has been president. And if we can have somebody like that again, it's interesting how he's been described over the coverage of the funeral. And, whatever you'd like to bring up, too. Politics on the table. Our guest right now is Dr. Martin Gruber. He is a professor of political science, assistant chair and past chair of the department at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, also director of the pre-law program. His teaching in the areas of public law and American politics. And we're welcoming phone calls. We're also going to be speaking a little bit later this hour with Ken Rudin, who is the political editor for National Public Radio. Here's our number. Please join us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, and all our lines are open right now, so give us a call. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, about 28 million Americans live with hearing loss, and as baby boomers continue to age and young people put in those iPod things in their ears and MP3 players, and those of us who work in radio turn up the volume on our earphones day after day. The number of people who will be experiencing hearing loss is expected to nearly double by the year 2030. So we'll be talking with an audiologist about the effect of loud noises. Is it a normal part of the aging process and why to lose some of your hearing? That's coming up the second hour of our show. Professor Martin Gruber is with us right now. Ken Rudin, political director for National Public Radio, will be with us at 9:30. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And we start our calls with Alan. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, I had a question. You've been, your guest has been talking mostly about the Democrat side. And on the Republican side, if he sees any difference between, you know, the normal pattern, I think, has been from Nixon on to Bush, has been, you know, appeal to the hard right in the primary and then try to go to the center, you know, during the general election. And I wonder if he sees the problems Bush is having, you know, is that going to change that? Is it going to be difficult to... to just run hard right in the primary.
Okay. Professor Gruber? Oh, dear, he's not here anymore. We need to reconnect with our guest, Professor Gruber, and talk about the primaries and whether or not... how the Republicans will play to their base, if they'll run on hard right messages, and also how the Democrats will be running on their base. Will it be more liberal? We just need to reconnect with Professor Gruber, and then we will get his viewpoint on that. And we're welcoming your phone calls on all kinds of political topics. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. The second part of this hour, Ken Rudin, political editor for National Public Radio, who writes the Political Junkie column for NPR.org, a column that ran earlier online at the Washington Post, and you hear him on National Public Radio frequently. He will be with us to talk about all manner of politics, and we have Professor Gruber back. I don't know if you heard the caller. He was wondering if Republicans will continue in primaries to tailor their message to the faithful, meaning those who are more conservative.
I think they will. I think they have little choice, even though that might relegate them to be more of a sectional party. But I think that, even the candidates who previously were not identified with the moral majority people, like McCain and Giuliani, they've tried to meet with these people, you know, at John Jones University and Liberty University, to try to show they don't have horns.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Giuliani, what do you make of his political playbook being stolen, as he said, or somehow being made public?
I think this always happens, you know, dirty tricks from 72 and an 80, where actually even in Wisconsin, you know, in the legislative election, there was this allegation of somebody stealing the proposals.
We go next to Bob from Eau Claire, our next caller. Hi, Bob.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, Bob, how are you?
I'm excellent today. I'm calling about the fact that President Ford continued this elitist, we are them and you are the hoi polloi thing by pardoning somebody before they were even convicted, because it would be so comforting to the nation to pardon a criminal before they got convicted. And it would be so good for us. And it's kind of like this patronizing male elitist attitude that these people seem to get after they've been in that position.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. Was it good for the nation, the pardon, Professor Gruber?
I think it was. I think that it cost Ford. It made him, he said when he became president that he was a Ford and not a Lincoln, and his aspiration was just to be Speaker of the House. But he began to think of the 1976 election, and he
was doing things to be presidential, and putting this long national nightmare, as he called it, behind us, he thought he could accomplish by pardoning Nixon. But the cynics were saying there must have been a deal. Maybe Alexander Haig had been the liaison in order to get Nixon to resign to guarantee that he would be pardoned. I don't know if there's any evidence about that, but there's suspicion.
What do you think about the coverage? It almost reached the point where you felt that a good, decent, honorable, didn't have a lot of lofty aspirations, just a good man. He was the last good man who would ever be president of the United States.
Well, you know, we blame the leaders, but who votes for the leaders? So we don't blame ourselves. We build them up to be more than human, and then we tear them down to be less than human. Gerry Ford was president for 2 years. He tried to be presidential. Remember, he thought we could have this campaign to whip inflation now, and then Alan Greenspan said, no, the problem isn't inflation, we're getting into a recession. And also he wanted to campaign against swine flu. He thought that might be 1918 all over again. And some people got the vaccines and became ill. And so
oh, I forgot about that.
In his face. Well, you know,
right.
One thing people forget about, in his 2 years, Ford named one person to the U.S. Supreme Court who's still around, John Paul Stevens.
Right.
So, you know, one thing to consider about what's going to happen the next 2 years, will there be another vacancy on the Supreme Court and the Democrats narrowly controlling the Senate? Will they be able to block any of the nominations of President Bush? You know, John Bolton was on recess appointment, and there was no prospect that his chances of being confirmed would have improved, and so he recognized the inevitability and resigned from the position.
Yeah. I saw an interview with Stevens. I guess he just hasn't given one until yesterday on ABC last night, and he talked about Gerald Ford, and he talked about, because he's considered to be a, I don't know, somewhat liberal, if you want to use that description, member of the court right now, but he said, no, I'm definitely a conservative. So the idea of how we define conservative back when he was put on the court and how we define it now is quite
he's
different.
He's a centrist, but the court has moved to the right.
Right.
So he's along with the two Clinton nominees, Ginsburg and Breyer, in the so-called left wing of the court, but it's moved to the right.
Yeah. The other thing that we need to spend just a moment on, somebody's got to do something about Iraq in the next 2 years, it seems to me. Don't you think?
Well, the Baker-Hamilton Committee recommended that by the beginning of 2008, we will have drawn down our forces. And yet McCain wants to increase, and Bush is unhappy about the recommendations from Baker-Hamilton, so he's asked other organizations in the government to give him recommendations. The proof is in the pudding. You know, he's going to make this address to the American people, and already we know that some of these presidential candidates are going to bash whatever he says. And even the Republicans might feel, you know, the more moderate Republicans might feel that this is going to cost them in 2008. So let's get this behind us.
Right. And who is, we haven't spent a whole lot of time on the Republicans because it seems to be the Democrats' moment for the time being. Who's the guy for the Republicans?
Well, at the moment, it looks like McCain, but he has, you know, the Democrats have to have somebody who can appeal to the liberals who vote in their primaries and caucuses.
Right.
The Republicans have to have somebody who can succeed in their primaries and caucuses and be more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you've got to reposition yourself if you survive for the general election, hug
right.
the middle of the road.
Right. But in terms of our policy in Iraq, those definitions of conservative and liberal and what the policy ought to be are kind of, they're not clearly defined, are they?
Not at all. You know,
no.
And of course you get John Kerry, who was accused of flip-flopping, but, you know, you want to be all things to all people. You want to be a hawk and also a dove. And it doesn't really work that way. You know, again, Hillary is in that awkward situation. She has been a supportive force for the war, and this may not play well in 2008.
Right. Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate your thoughts this morning.
Well, glad to.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you again.
Okay.
Our guest this first part of the program is Professor of Political Science, Dr. Martin Gruberg, who is assistant. He's professor and assistant chair and past chair of the department at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. He is also the author of a number of books, including one some time ago on women in American politics. We're going to spend some time talking about Nancy Pelosi also with Ken Rudin, who is with us now, political editor for National Public Radio. He's been directing campaign coverage for the network. He writes the Political Junkie column for NPR.org, and you can hear him on the air frequently with political coverage on National Public Radio. He's been managing editor of The Hotline, a daily political newsletter. He was at ABC News for a number of years, serving as deputy political director, and later as the off-air reporter on Capitol Hill covering the House. He first joined NPR as its first political editor in 1991, and he loves politics, and he's great at analyzing politics. I guess he has. I didn't know this about him. But in 1966, he began collecting campaign buttons, and he now has, what do you do with all of these? 70,000 campaign buttons. He has analyzed and dissected every congressional race in the nation since 1984. Hi, Ken.
Boy, there's not enough you could say about Ken Rudin.
And I could have gone on, right, Ken? You know, I thought I had a big deal when I found a John Kennedy button in my – I was cleaning stuff out over the new year, and there was John Kennedy. I thought, oh, this is an important thing, and you've got 70,000 of these.
I have William Proxmire for governor.
Oh, my gosh. What do you do with all of them?
Well, I guess it's like somebody who collects baseball cards and loves baseball. I've always loved politics, and I, you know, it's like a personal personification of all these campaigns that I've watched and covered and read about.
Right. And when did it all start with you, when you were a kid?
It was probably a drug abuse. Actually, I was 15 years old, and I, you know, was watching the campaigns of Reagan and Pat Brown, and actually in 1966, Pat Lucy ran against Warren Knowles.
Oh, you're sharp.
But
you're
And Rockefeller and all these guys, and I just said, well, you know, if I love politics and I love baseball, I collect baseball cards, I might as well collect buttons too. But at the end of the 66 campaign, I had a shoebox filled. I said, my goodness, I can't imagine that I could have so many campaign buttons.
Huh.
And now the house is just crawling with them.
There is something similar, isn't there, between politics and baseball?
There is. It's history, it's lore, it's trivia, and it's just something you just talk about. It's like, you know, how could you talk about current day baseball without talking about Mays and Mantle and those guys? And how could you talk about current politics
right.
without talking about giants of the past?
Right, and people win and people lose.
Right.
And, all right. So here, let's start with this. If your first name is not Hillary or Barack, it will be very difficult to get noticed in the next couple of years. Is that
well, certainly you said Democrat, that. And we saw that with Evan Bayh. I mean, Evan Bayh, 2 weeks after announcing that the launching of an exploratory committee, said, I can't compete. I guess all the Democrats felt, from the beginning, the Democrats felt that the object was to be the anti-Hillary, the non-Hillary.
Right.
But when Barack Obama suggested that he too is interested, he may have become, the anti-Hillary, which is weird because if Barack Obama doesn't run, then what happens?
Right. Is that likely?
I think he runs. I think he's gone out too far on a limb for him to pull back.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously not everybody is scared to death of him. John Edwards, who has not stopped running since running for vice president in 2004. He's still in the race. Tom Vilsack, the outgoing governor of Iowa, is running, and Dennis Kucinich, a bunch of other Democrats are running as well.
Yeah. What about Vilsack? You know, he announced that he was going to run, and there was virtually no coverage of the whole thing. I don't know very much about him. I don't think many of us know much about him.
Well, the stuff we do know about him is the fact that he's Catholic and he's a pro-choice Catholic and he was very popular in Iowa and he was on Al Gore and John Kerry's shortlist for vice president. So he was a possible candidate there. He's an earnest guy who's I guess on the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. And to be honest, if you look at all the folks who've been elected president over the years, they're mostly governors or former governors:
mm-hmm.
Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. So unlike the many senators, if not all the senators who are running, you have somebody like Vilsack who has been the chief executive of a state.
Right. So why aren't we paying more attention to him?
Well, one, because he announced in 2006, and not a lot of people weren't paying attention. I mean, look at John Edwards. John Edwards, for God knows why, he announced the week between Christmas and New Year's, and nobody was paying attention. I mean, perhaps He thought maybe he'd have all the stage to himself in that week. But one, very few people watched the news that week, and two, whatever what people were watching was about first the Gerald Ford funeral and then the Saddam Hussein execution.
Right. Well, he's pretty savvy politically. Why in the world would he have done that?
You don't mean Saddam Hussein?
No, no, no. John Edwards.
Yeah. Well, not many people talk about his.
Right.
Well, you know something. It's a question that I have not seen a good answer to. I guess maybe he thought he'd have a stage to himself, but again, he did it from New Orleans, which, you know, if you think of the real downturn of the Bush administration's public support, of course it's been Iraq, but it's also Katrina and the government's response to Katrina. And I think John Edwards, who's a populist, who always talks about the two Americas and, you know, the disparity between the rich and the poor, Edwards made the case, you know, makes a good case, you know, that announcing from New Orleans is not a bad idea. It's just that the timing of it was peculiar. I think the weirdest time of all was happened in 1995 when Richard Lugar, the senator from Indiana, announced his candidacy, but unfortunately, and now he announced it an hour after the bombing of in Oklahoma City, and so that didn't make money front page papers the next
right.
day.
So you as a political junkie, is it too much for even a guy like you to have this campaign go on for 2 years, Ken?
Oh God, no.
No,
how often would I have a Kathleen Dunn show? No, but really, I mean, you know, look, in the old days, we talk about, you know, John Kennedy announcing for president in January of 1960, the same year he was elected. You know, but now it's a 2 year thing because of people like Hillary Clinton and apparently Barack Obama, who could raise tons of money at the drop of a hat. And you need to, you know, you need to run earlier and earlier. Look at, you know, Jimmy Carter was Jimmy Who for the longest time, and he announced like 2 years in advance of his 1976 election.
Did he?
But given the fact that there were so many more popular and well-known candidates, you know, he thought he'd start from scratch, and he announced like literally 2 years in advance.
Let's jump to some phone calls. Marty from Douglas County. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Here's my political dream team. It would be Clinton president, Obama vice president, Al Gore, Secretary of Interior, and Bill Richardson, Secretary of State. But my question is, John McCain, when you see him on television, he does not appear to be terribly healthy. Sometimes he's looking kind of okay, and then he looks kind of bloated. Do you have any inside info on Senator McCain's health?
I never like to talk about rumors, but there have been rumors about John McCain's health for some time. And a lot of times when I see him, I don't think he looks that well either. He did have serious skin cancer. He does have a large scar on the side of his face. He would be 73 years old if he was elected in 2008, which would be the oldest president in history. You know, a lot of people say that, well, Hillary Clinton could win the nomination, but you can't win the election. And John McCain may not win the nomination, but he certainly could win the election. But I wonder if somebody pushing for more and more troops in Iraq, given the public's repulsion of the war, the disapproval of the war, including among Republicans, whether McCain is the right guy. But if it's not, you know, we go back to the old question, if it's not McCain, then who? And the other Republicans have problems as well.
How would you answer that question, if not McCain, who?
Well, the top two, if you look at the polls, are Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney. Now, Giuliani, if you look at the national polls, he's ostensibly the front runner, which is, given the fact that he's been married three times,
right,
given the fact that he's pro-choice in a pro-life party, given the fact that he's pro-gay rights in a anti-gay rights party, and given the fact that he's a anti-gun in a pro-gun party, what were they thinking? Now, obviously, he was a hero after 9/11, but people forget that on 9/10 or 9/9, you know, before the attacks in New York, Giuliani was just barely treading water as far as popularity. So I don't think I don't think he comes close to getting the nomination. I understand the appeal of him, and he is a very charismatic guy, but if you've ever been to a Republican convention, these are not the kind of people they nominate for president.
And why are you a Hillary fan, Marty?
Well, I'm actually, it's kind of funny I'm even saying this, because I'm not a Hillary fan.
Oh, you're not?
I'm just looking at a ticket that could really kick some serious behind. And I think that Clinton Obama would be completely unbeatable.
Well, there are some people who think the complete opposite, that given the fact that we've had very few women presidents and very few black presidents, like zero,
right,
and to put them both on the same ticket is you're asking for double trouble. I've heard a lot of Gore Obama dream tickets, but you know, Al Gore still says that he's not running, and until he loses weight, I believe him.
Thanks, Bertie, very much for your call. Let's go next to Joe from La Crosse. Hi, Joe.
Yes, I'm calling, and I've heard so many things that I could cover, but what I'd like to say is that we do have to get someone in there that's going to be more electable, and they can help anyone else that's coming along that seems to be a good candidate, because the those that, if they do get elected, or which would at this point seem like it's impossible, but
who are you for, Joe?
Pardon?
Who are you for? Who are you supporting?
I what I've seen so far and heard, I look at Clinton as a good candidate, and that's one of those that would be really tough.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Joe, thanks for the call. Ken?
Well, you know, it reminds me of what I heard when I was in Iowa right before the 2004 caucuses, and this is the time when Howard Dean was, you know, again, considered the front runner. But more and more voters told me the reason they were backing John Kerry was not because they loved the guy or they felt, you know, his warmth,
yeah,
but
right.
The fact that he could win, and Democrats really, really, really wanted to win. Ultimately, Kerry was 80,000 votes. If he had gotten 80,000 more votes in Ohio, he would have been the next president. But I could see the same thing happen in 2008, that, you know, you may have a dream candidate, but you want to win. Now, the question is whether Hillary Clinton is that candidate. She, you know, there's a lot of people who love her, but there's a lot of people who hate her. And some Democrats said, do I want to be reminded of the Clinton, you know, travails all over again? I think it's time for a new face.
Obviously, the issue of Iraq is going to be with us for quite some time. Ken, how do the Democrats take on this issue, and how do they need to take on this issue to work to their advantage in 2008? And how does it's still such a mess there. It's just awful. And now we got a president who wants more troops, and we got the public saying we want him home.
And you have a Democratic Party in Congress that really, a majority in Congress that really doesn't know exactly what it wants either. I mean, it would be nice to have the troops out yesterday, and it would be nice that there's no, you know, butchery of people afterwards. But, you know, people like John Edwards and John Kerry and Hillary Clinton all paid the price of the fact that they voted for the war in 2002. There are a lot of anti-war Democrats who will never forgive them, a lot of so-called Ned Lamont Democrats who remember, you know, who just remember the vote in 2002. But I think all of them have agreed that their vote was a mistake. All of them agree that the war is a mistake, and all of them feel that the best way out, you know, is a fast way out.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there are some people like Dennis Kucinich, and the congressman from Ohio. Russ Feingold is not running, of course, but he would have been another one who, in the eyes of many people, were right about the war from the start, and at least they could have that in their favor.
Ken Rudin is our guest, political editor for National Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. One line is open if you'd like to join our conversation about politics. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder that at noon we have live coverage of the inauguration of Governor Jim Doyle and other state constitutional officers at the state capitol. This event will preempt the last half hour of the Larry Mueller program and the first airing of Chapter a Day. Chapter a Day available for online listening at WPR.org. And also the regular evening rebroadcast at 11 p.m. Okay, let's go to more phone calls for Ken Rudin, political editor for National Public Radio. Tom from Mequon, hi.
Hi. I wanted to point out that it seems to me that since the election, a major point is being overlooked, and that is that I think the reason that the Democrats won as well as they did is that a lot of blue dog Democrats have come back, and that I think there's a lot of reasons why that is, but I think a couple big reasons is that I think people are seeing their health care being eliminated or cut down or the price raised up, and they feel that the Democrats are the only hope that we're going to have something improved with that. And the other thing is that a lot of working people, American legal working people, see that the rich Republicans and George Bush embodies this, are going to sell us out and are going to have are going to leave our border open, and they're going to make the 20 million illegal immigrants legal, and then they're going to be able to bring in 40 or 60 million more over the next 5 years, and that's really going to change the country even more for the worse than it is by all this illegal immigration. And my point is this: if the Democrats go along with this because they feel they're going to have more voters for him, it's going to be a short 2 years, because a lot of working people, me included, are going to vote against him if they do that.
Ken.
Well, on the first issue, prescription drugs, that is one of Nancy Pelosi's things. You know, she talks about all the things she'd like to accomplish in the first 100 hours of the 110th Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the first one is ethics. There's also earmarks. They want to implement the 9/11 commission recommendations. But working out a deal with the pharmaceutical industry to lower the price of prescription drugs, that is on the top of Pelosi's list. Now, the problem, of course, is that the House, if we're just talking about the House of Representatives, that's one thing. But there's also a Senate involved. And nothing gets done in the Senate, as we saw the last couple of years, unless you have 60 votes. Republicans had 55, a majority of 55 in the Senate last Congress, and couldn't get a lot done. Democrats only have 51. So for all the things that Nancy Pelosi would love to get done, and prescription drugs is one of the key things, it remains to be seen whether the Senate will go along with it. Now, as far as immigration, well, the Republican Party is completely split on this. The Democratic Party didn't really speak much of it at all, but I would suspect that more Democrats agree with President Bush on allowing more immigrants to stay in this country and work to attain citizenship than they do with the minority Republicans, who feel that the border should be tightened. But my suspicion is that in the first couple of months, there will be a serious effort to do some kind of overhaul of the immigration policy.
Tom, thanks for the call. Paul is next from Green Bay. Hi, Paul.
Hi. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys. I just have a quick question. A lot of the names you guys have been mentioning, are from Congress. My question is to your guest that if there are any people that are outside of Congress that you would consider front runners, considering the fact that, historically, getting elected from Congress to the presidency has been very, very difficult. If memory serves, the last one that was elected from Congress to the presidency was Kennedy. And, attacking a record is, a difficult thing to, counteract. So I'll hang up.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Paul, for your call. Ken?
Well, Paul's exactly right. Not only was John F. Kennedy the last person elected directly from the Congress, but in the history, there's only been three. Senator Warren Harding in 1920 and Congressman James Garfield in 1880. Those are the only three people ever elected president directly from Congress. But as far as, the people outside Congress, Wesley Clark, who had run before, is talking about running again. There are some former governors, of course, like Tommy Thompson. I can't remember what state he's from, but Tommy Thompson's thinking of running.
You're just kidding, right?
I am just
kidding. Yeah, I knew that.
I'm just kidding.
If you knew about Proxmire's race,
right. And Gaylord Nelson. But Tommy Thompson's talking about running. Mike Huckabee, who's leaving as governor of Arkansas, is talking about running. And as I said, Tom Vilsack, the outgoing governor of Iowa. So we talk a lot about Congress, and Washington is obsessed with members of Congress running. I would say that perhaps if you're a member of the United States Senate and you're not thinking about running for president, you're in the wrong line of business. But I agree with Paul that the way to look, really, is outside the Congress, outside the Senate and the House, and perhaps looking at governors. Mark Warner, a lot of people thought would have been a very strong candidate, but he, too, announced a couple of months ago that he's not going to do it for 2008.
Yeah. John from Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Hi. I get a little tired of listening to, about Hillary running all the time. I don't think she's electable at all. And it goes all the way back to cookies and the way she handled the health care when she marched in and tried to take that over, her stand in Iraq, guns, and that she's really just a carpetbagger who moved into New York and got herself a job.
Why is all the attention and the odds are that she's going to be the nominee? Is it the money factor, Ken?
It's money. It's the fact that she's the first lady. It's the fact that she's a Clinton. And, of course, probably the most popular person in the Democratic Party today is Bill Clinton. As far as the carpetbagger issue, I think voters of New York settled that twice. They
like her.
They liked her, and they reelected her by a landslide last month in November. But again, I think John makes an important point, is that what states does she win that John Kerry and Al Gore could not win? Does she win states in the South? I don't think so.
No.
So it's, the question is whether, partisan and as controversial as the Bush presidency has been, do people want to go back to the Clinton administration and the Clinton years where all that back and forth goes on? I think that's the advantage that people like a Vilsack or a John Edwards might have, or even certainly Obama, in the fact that they're fresh faces.
Yeah. Thanks, John, for your call. Let's go next to Dan from Milwaukee. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'd like to know what the guest's thoughts are on Wesley Clark. A friend of mine has gotten me with success to follow Wesley Clark for the past couple of years or so.
Well, Wesley Clark, the retired general, you know, and early anti-Iraq wars person, did not make a big impact in the 2004 election. He did win the Oklahoma primary. That was the only primary he won, and he dropped out. This year, you know, again, the advantage he had last time was that he was a fresh face. The disadvantage was he had never run a campaign before. But he hasn't really done much since the 2004 election. He hasn't been really that public, certainly compared to the other possible candidates. So we think he will run again. He's, you know, certainly gearing up. He's getting a staff together. But he just didn't seem to catch on. And I suspect that the same will be the case in 2008. Mm.
Your thoughts, Ken, on the Gerald Ford funeral?
Well, you know, it's funny how we change. I mean, I remember the Ford presidency very, very well. And, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike thought at the time was that he, of course, certainly he was an accidental president, unelected president, unelected vice president. But I think the feeling has always been from day one that he was a decent guy.
Right.
That, you know, on controversial social issues, but he had a decency that I think showed through in all the eulogies we've seen over the last couple of days.
And we've lost that?
We have lost it. You know, we didn't have it. And I'm not saying it's just George Bush's fault. It's, you know, the Democratic Congress will give as much as it gets. But obviously the two sides don't like each other. And I kind of feel that the 2008 campaign is not going to be much different.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Dan. We go to Susan from Milwaukee next. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. I want to propose a totally unrealistic ticket. But
okay.
Lincoln Chafee and Barack Obama.
Ah.
What party?
Well, we would have to have both Republican and Democrat there.
Well, Lincoln Chafee, of course, is out of a job. He was voted out of office in Rhode Island as a senator. The Republicans never really liked him that much, given the fact that he was the only Republican to vote against Alito for Supreme Court Justice, the only Republican to vote against the war. So, I mean, obviously he would run as a Democrat, if anything. But, you know, he was kind of an odd duck. He was not a glad handler. He was not somebody who sought office. The only reason he became a senator because his late father, John Chafee, died in office, and then Lincoln Chafee was appointed to his seat.
I recently heard an interview with Terry Gross. He was on with Terry Gross, and I was just so impressed to get what you're saying, the type of person that he came across as, and I just thought he'd be an excellent candidate. Maybe he could run as an independent.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about people like Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City. He's ostensibly a Republican, even though deep in his heart he's a Democrat. The only reason he ran as a Republican is because he couldn't win the Democratic primary. But there are a lot of people who are saying, like, enough of this partisanship. Left-wing, right-wing, Republican, Democrat, look for some independent. I mean, the closest we came to anything like that was Ross Perot, but for all the, you know, the 19 million votes he got in 1992, he didn't win a single electoral vote. He didn't win a single state. So you could talk about dream tickets of a third party, an independent party, but, you know, until it happens, I won't believe it until I see it.
Thanks, Susan, for the call. Let's go to Jerry from Madison. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, I was wondering who the shortest president was that we ever had. How tall is Russ Feingold, and does size matter?
I don't think Russ Feingold is short.
Boy, the boy,
he's,
you know,
average. Average.
I don't have a 7-second delay on my answer, do I?
No.
But, I think that. Well, I mean, who was the short? Was it Fillmore? Was it Zachary Taylor? I mean, it was a 19th-century president who was the shortest, and until Jimmy Carter beat Gerald Ford in 1976, I believe the taller candidate has always won, if not almost always.
Right. Well, Teddy Roosevelt wasn't tall, was he? Or maybe he was. I don't know. I think
he was certainly taller than Alton Parker.
Yeah.
as I well remember.
Yeah. We were looking at the presidents as we were sitting at dinner last night. We got one of these. It's almost like a game. It's got all their heads on it, and then it's got information about their presidency, and it was kind of fun to look at all of them, but it didn't have their height. So,
No. And with William Howard Taft, hopefully not their girth.
Yeah, right. So tell me about tomorrow. Big day for the Democrats. Big day for
it
the Democrats.
It is a big day. You know, Republicans are already upset about the fact that the Democrats are not playing fair. But, of course, Democrats have been complaining for the past 12 years that the Republicans didn't play fair. And just like before that, the Republicans complained that the Democrats didn't play fair for the 40 years prior to that. So the whining is to be, you know, expected. But, again, it's the first female speaker in history. Mm-hmm. It is a historic moment. How long the honeymoon lasts, you know, is anybody's guess. Certainly, there are a lot of issues that the Democrats are not united on themselves, starting with Iraq. So it would be very interesting that maybe you could pass an increase in the minimum wage. Maybe you can have some kind of a stem cells research bill, maybe an ethics upgrade. But from then, you wonder what's going to happen, given the fact that the 2008 election campaign has started already.
Yeah, and how many buttons do you have?
Not enough.
Yeah, you'll have a lot more.
But, you know, I write the Political Junkie column for NPR, and I think everybody who sends me a button could get their name. No, that's not.
No, don't.
No,
it's public radio after all, right?
That's right.
Ken, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
Ken Rudin, political editor for National Public Radio. We thank him for being with us. He directs campaign coverage for the network and has for a number of years and is a true political junkie. And we thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour as well. We also want to thank Professor Martin Gruberg from the Political Science Department at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, for being with us. Mimi Notstein, our on-air production. Rhonda Fanning, our producer. Copies of the show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program 13D. News ahead on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.